Passage is part of that part of John's Gospel that we know as the farewell discourses. This seeming conversation that Jesus has with his followers is placed during a meal in an upper room where Jesus has already washed feet and told them about how they are to be servants to one another, where he will break bread and he will pass it to the one who will betray him, will share it with one who will deny him, and with others who will, when it comes down to the crunch, flee in terror and forsake him. We see reference in there of dying for one's friends. And it was one of the ways in which Aristotle spoke in his writings in the Nicomachean Ethics. John would have probably been very familiar with those writings, and they might even have been the basis of the way that he wrote these discourses attributed to Jesus. For, after all, much of what is written there is not necessarily new, even if it's put maybe in a different way. Universal wisdom has been taught down through the ages by people of all faiths. We think of the Golden Rule, and one of the posters that I have and I've had on display at times at Hove is this one called the Golden Rule. And it speaks of that rule: love one another as you are loved, treat each other as you want to be treated, in either its negative or positive forms, in over 15 of the major religious traditions of the world. In Buddhism, trust not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. In Confucianism, one word which sums up the basis of all good conduct: loving kindness. Do not do to others what you do not want done to yourself. Native spirituality: we are as much alive as we keep the earth alive. Zoroastrianism: do not do unto others whatever is injurious or injurious to yourself. Islam: not one of you truly believes until you wish for others what you wish for yourself. Judaism: what is hateful to you, do not do to your neighbour. This is the whole Torah. All the rest is commentary. We can see how this universal wisdom permeates through life, an understanding of the world that we live in, an understanding of the need for us to live our lives treating others as we wish to be treated, treating others in ways, or not treating others in ways, that we don't want to be treated. And so we're told to love. And I want us just to briefly think of three different places, if you like, where we are to love. And the first is within our community. And by our community, I mean the community that finds in Dorset Gardens a place to come, a place to be, a place to, for many, live out their faith, for others to live in service of others. In such a community where we are called to love one another, there are demands that it will make on us. One of my favorite quotes at the moment is a quote from Olga Kazan, who said, "The community you end up in should be somewhere where you can let your weirdness shine." The community you end up in should be somewhere you can let your weirdness shine. There's something that is so fully inclusive in that statement, isn't there? A place where you can be you, the fullest you, and find that you are welcome, you're included, you are loved, you are held. All welcome. But there's something in our communities we need which is beyond welcome. For inclusiveness is not just about people being welcome as they come through a door. It's actually something about how people are valued, how people are able to offer back into that community. So often in the lives of church, we do things for others. We invite people on and put on a meal, which is great in every sense and form. But do we ever think of asking those for whom we put on that meal what they can offer into the life of community? Could they actually be the people who cook the meal, who share it with others? The church so often seems to be willing to do unto others, it fails to actually think of what others may do for us. And we see that in different ways. We see it when a church with a lovely property feels that it is, if you like, a landlord of that property in the way that it leases or lets it out to other people, to other groups. Of how it's, if you like, more of a cash transaction than a relationship that can be grown and built. We know it's challenging at times, but with Lunch Positive, there is a relationship which has to be built for us to be able to offer to this community the best that we can offer. What other groups are there in our building? The Clare Project is another one where we need to say, what can you offer back into our community? Not how much we're going to charge you for our room. What can you offer back? By that way, we show that we truly value people and we truly include people in the life of our community. When we do to others, that means or shows that we can be manipulative in the way that we do. We can put those expectations of how we expect them to be on them. One of the hymns which I'm really pleased that we have in Singing the Faith, although we're not going to sing it today, is number 615. Which speaks of love and letting love be real in giving and receiving, without the need to manage or to own. A haven free from posing and pretending, where every weakness may be safely known. Let love be real, not grasping or confining. That strange embrace that holds yet sets us free, that helps us face the risk of truly living and makes us brave to be what we might be. Give me your strength when all my words are weakness. Give me your love in spite of all you know. And in the last verse, Let love be real without or with no manipulation, no secret wish to harness or control. Let us accept each other's incompleteness and share the joy of learning to be whole. If we show that kind of love, then we do become that kind of community which people will end up in, where they're able to let their weirdness shine. Our call is, however, beyond these walls of this building. It's a call to love in the community that surrounds us, the community in which we are situated. Karen Armstrong, a lady who's written a number of really interesting books, is someone who has put forward the whole idea of there being a charter of compassion, or charter for compassion, around the world. And there are groups and states and areas around the world in different countries that have signed up to the Charter of Compassion. It speaks of the way that we need to love in our communities, our wider communities. She says this: a compassionate city is an uncomfortable city. A city that is uncomfortable when anyone is homeless or hungry. Uncomfortable if every child isn't loved and given rich opportunities to grow and thrive. Uncomfortable when, as a community, we don't treat our neighbours as we would wish to be treated. I don't have to tell you of the struggles that people face in their daily living. You see it on the streets time and time again. But what we see is just the surface of what is also underneath. For there are far more people who are struggling with life than we would ever see and realise. Whether it be poverty, whether it be mental health issues, whether it will be a sense of isolation, of exclusion. There is so much. And so it is that as individuals in our daily living, that we, in all the relationships that we have, whether they be relationships which are lifelong or relationships that are 30 seconds long, there is a call for us to show love, however we can. Whether it's in the way that we treat the parking attendant who's just given us a ticket. That's a difficult one, I know. Whether it's in the interaction we have with a shop assistant. Whether it's as we walk along the road and we step out of someone's way who needs the pass. In all sorts of ways, all our actions need to be full of love. And love becomes that witness. And it becomes that witness that says that we, and they might not know that we are people of faith, but it says that we believe that love is the way, that love is stronger than hate. Love is stronger than evil, and that we are going to live by that way, whatever that might cost, because it is the only way that can bring hope in our world. And then the third place is our love for the whole world, the way that we are a community that shares that love. And so we can think of things like the fact that we are a church and a circuit of sanctuary. And I just so much am in admiration of the work that Sue and Ruth do and Deeptima did with us as part of the sanctuary movement. A place that says we are on the side of those for whom life is a struggle. For people who are looking for a safe place to live and to grow. We do it in the way that we try and speak up for justice. How we might write to government and talk about or ask questions about the policies that they put forward. Of how we might be supporters of groups like Amnesty International and write letters on behalf of those falsely imprisoned or improperly imprisoned around the world. Of how we stand up for peace and justice in this community as a sign of us standing up for peace and justice around the world. In the Focus letter, I quote Peter Rollins, who wrote in his book, How, and in brackets, Not, close brackets, to Speak of God, writes, instead of following the Greek-influenced idea of orthodoxy as right belief, the emerging community is helping us to discover the more Hebraic and mystical notion of the orthodox Christian as one who believes in the right way. That is, believing in a loving, sacrificial, and Christ-like manner. Not what we believe, but the way in which we believe. That we live by the words that we speak, rather than just pronounce them as a judgment on others. How we make the words our own as individuals and as a community. In John's first letter to the church, he writes about that love as well and about that need for us to love. And in this transliteration that's in the message, he writes, the command we have from Christ is blunt. Loving God includes loving people. You've got to love both. That's our call in our community, within the wider community and in the world, to love, and to love again. May God's Spirit strengthen us as we seek to do that day by day. Amen.